I'm Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Per usual, Matt Norlander is here with me. If you watch it on YouTube, honor Brandon Davies the best way you know how. Smash that like button. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast, please do that wherever you listen to podcasts like Apple and Spotify. Let's get into it. It has been exactly, I counted, 31 days, I hope I counted right, since Dusty May guided Michigan to the national championship. Since then, he's got enough done in the transfer portal, I think, to have a realistic shot to try to take the Wolverines to back-to-back titles next season. But today's question is, will he even be there? I ask because there are various reports, including one from longtime NBA insider Mark Stein, suggesting that multiple NBA franchises have various levels of interest in luring Dusty to that league. Orlando is reportedly one. Golden State is reportedly possibly another. Norlander, it's great to see you on a Thursday morning. I'm not surprised that NBA franchises are reportedly interested in Dusty May. If I had one, I would be. But my question for you is, would you be surprised if he left this offseason for any NBA job?
I would be surprised if he left Michigan to take an NBA job. I wouldn't be surprised if we ticked the clock ahead, got to May 7th, 2030, checked in on the world there. Strait of Hormuz, fully opened, got to believe it by 2030.
I mean, if you say so.
Got to believe it. Hantavirus, hopefully well in the rear view.
I mean, if you say so, but I don't know, man. They got mines in that strait. They put mines in the bottom of that strait.
That's got nothing to do with hantavirus.
I know, but it's just a lot to deal with. It's a lot to deal with.
Let him go. He's rolling. And Dusty May could be at the NBA level in 4 years. The three things that everyone knows are connected: the Strait of Hormuz, hantavirus, yes, and Dusty May's professional career. Everyone knows. I think that we could get there eventually, especially if Michigan is like this upcoming season is good again, top five team in the country, all that stuff. It'll only increase that. And generally speaking, I think he has the temperament for NBA coaching. I would be surprised if he leaves to take an NBA job. Doesn't mean, like, I don't know if it'll, one, happen, two, even get reported, because a lot of the stuff is done very, very discreetly and quietly. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he actually gets at least one, if not two, actual interview opportunities, if for no other reason than he should want to go through that process. So whenever that opportunity does come, be it in 4 weeks or 4 years or whenever, it won't be his first rodeo. So I do think that would be a possibility. I think Billy Donovan going to Orlando is way more likely. Not even that Donovan would necessarily get that job for sure. Keep in mind the Knicks had a coach this time a year ago. He got fired for not making a deeper run into the playoffs, and Thibs probably, if he wants to, is going to have another job in short order here as well. So we got a couple of Michigan adjacent things, but I'm not surprised we got to this point. First week of May, some jobs opening. You've got a guy who just won a national championship. He's not the only head coach that's obviously been connected to this kind of stuff. We've talked previously on Todd Golden, but he's not going anywhere. He's just in the midst of a contract renegotiation. He'll be at Florida next season with the preseason number one team. But I expect Dusty May, with plenty of important players back, to be right there in Ann Arbor, Michigan, coaching the Wolverines next season.
I agree. Dusty strikes me as the type of person that wouldn't want to walk away from the situation that he has created. It doesn't mean that he would rule out, and I don't want to speak for him, but I don't assume that means he would rule out an NBA future at some point, because frankly, and like, let's settle in here for a second. Almost every college coach I've ever talked to who has a realistic chance to one day get that phone call from an NBA franchise has hinted to me, or flat out said, mostly off the record, but still, that yes, they would have an interest in that. Do you find that to be true? That most college coaches do have a level of interest, intrigue in moving to the NBA someday. It's at least in their head somewhere.
Yes, most, not all. There are definitely some coaches over the years I've talked to, whenever, however this comes up, where they do not have interest. I'm talking like specifically coaches that would be in that top 25, top 30 program realm. There are some out there that just prefer the college game. Now, I've also, some of these conversations, frankly, are backdated to 2022 or 2019 or 2017, a different era. Maybe they would have different opinions now in 2026 with everything that comes with being a college coach. But both jobs have a serious upside and serious downside. It's just a matter of how you view it. But yeah, this is this is an understandable goal because it is the highest level of coaching in the world, at the most, you know, talented by far, basketball league in the world. So it would stand to reason why that would be the case there. But no, I don't think Dusty's moving.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. There are pros and cons to both. What I hear from most coaches is that the pros of being an NBA coach would be, it's just, you're done with the recruiting. You can really take off season vacations and it doesn't negatively impact your job. It's just a better quality of life thing. Even if you are, quote, working, in a longer season and yep. coaching more games, there's a quality of life aspect to it that is intriguing to the people I've talked to, or at least I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but lots of them.
With less control. You give up a lot of control. That's, you got to be good with it.
That's
you
know? The other thing, with less control. So, for instance, in college, if you sign somebody who is a problem for you, or you overpay for something that just doesn't live up to its expectations, you can get out of that very quickly, and you're in control of it. You can say, this guy's a jerk. I can't coach him. This guy's butting heads with me. This guy's not as good as I thought. And you can fix that. It might mess up a year, but it doesn't have to mess up anything more than that. In the NBA, and it's not even really up to you usually, if your front office puts you in a relationship with a star player you can't get along with for whatever reason, it's over for you. You don't survive that situation. In college, you have the control to fix that situation on your own. In the NBA, if you find yourself in that situation with few exceptions, you have no control over it anymore. They get you and they move on with a new coach who they hope can connect with the star player because they got $250, $300 million tied up in this situation. They can't undo it. So that's the trade-off, I think. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but those are the two biggest differences, I think. You go to the NBA, you add a quality of life perspective that can be ideal or more ideal, but you give up a lot of control that you, particularly when you're cutting nets and winning a national championship, that you have on a campus, you have around your program, maybe not forever, but certainly for a long time.
And now look at what Dusty's got coming back. Just as a quick refresher, they're going to be a preseason top five team. They've got a huge matchup on tap. We'll get to that in just a second. But the roster will be Elliot Cadeau, who comes back, Trey McKinney, who comes back. They're still waiting on Merez Johnson. I think he's gone. I'm told it's not 100% decided, but call it 80-20. He's not going to come back. I understand why that would be the case. If he did come back, oh boy, then we got to really have a conversation about preseason number one again. But let's say he's gone. JP Estrella from Tennessee comes in. Mustafa Chom, the Cincinnati big man who will start at the five there. Jalen Reed, LSU transfer. Brandon McCoy, who I know they're really, really high on. Lincoln Cosby comes in. They've also got a player named Oscar Goodman, who's from New Zealand, I want to say. He'll be a sophomore and not really buzzed about outside of that building, but they have good expectations he can move into a real spot of impact next season. So with that in mind, the other Dusty May Michigan adjacent news, just to hit on quickly, and we got a lot to get to and less than an hour to get to this, so let's keep it moving, GP. We are going to have a title game rematch. I'll have more on the UConn side of this, I think, on Friday on .com. Dan Hurley is loading up again. And the first game that's of note is in the first week. It's going to be Friday, November 6th in Boston. Remember how UConn and BYU played last season in Boston? That's part of that Hall of Fame series. There's a variety of different games across the country in different spots. They're single game events, but the teams get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. And good on Dan Hurley and Dusty May for leaning in. We are going to have not just a title game rematch. We're having a title game rematch between non-conference opponents, between two coaches that have won national championships. You know, Dusty May just happened, and obviously Hurley had two before that. And we're getting it in the first week of the season. Trivia time!
Okay, let's go!
So we will have UConn versus Michigan Friday, November 6th in Boston. Title game rematch. That's a non-conference affair. Since in the past 30 years...
Yep.
And the answer is not 0, 1, or 2. So I'm not leading you down to like this almost ever happens. No, it's happened, but just see if you can get it on the first guess. How many times have we had a non-conference title game rematch the ensuing season after those two teams met for the championship?
It's obviously 7 times.
You want to give it one more guess? including Michigan, UConn. How many will it be?
Oh, including Michigan, UConn. I must have misunderstood the question. In that case, it's obviously 9 times.
A little bit more than that. The most recent was Nova, Michigan, but we had Duke versus Butler, both the year after they did it. Carolina, Michigan State, Florida and Ohio State did it. Carolina and Illinois did it. Maryland and Indiana did it. Michigan State. We had a run here from 96 through 02. Kentucky, Syracuse met. Arizona, Kentucky met. UConn, Duke met. In fact, I think UConn, Duke met in the first or second game of that season. Michigan State, Florida, Maryland, Indiana. We've had it 10 times, but only one previous instance over the past 15 seasons, and that was when Nova and Michigan met November 14th, the year after Nova won the national championship. So, and a beautifully awesome thing that both of these coaches leaned into this. They want the rematch. Obviously, UConn's going to get the rematch with Duke in November in Las Vegas. We'll get to some more Vegas hoops here before the end of the show, but I love this, and Michigan is loading up on its schedule. It's part of Players Era. We'll get to that in a second, too. But yeah, GP, come on now. First Friday, it's Friday nights when they could get the building, when the TV inventory would allow for it, but whatever. The season will start that Sunday in Rome with Notre Dame and Villanova, and then 5 days later, right away, national championship rematch in Boston in a neutral site one-off. Love to see it.
And if you want to get excited about it, get fired up heading into it, you can, of course, revisit Made for March on Paramount Plus. You can find it. It's right there on your screen next to Landman Season 2. I did watch it. It's great. And if I were an NBA front office member watching that, I would totally be like, yeah, maybe we should talk to Dusty May. He seems like the type of person that has the right temperament to coach in our league. And also, I thought the star, at least of the last episode, I mean, did you know LJ Kaysen was this awesome?
Was a great call. Didn't know he was that awesome, but he was awesome. Yeah.
Gassing
up his teammates and making sure Yaxel was in the right headspace. Really, really good stuff.
He was great. I mean, he played a role in winning that national championship, even though he never stepped on the court in the NCAA tournament. And it just, as I'm watching him, I'm just like, well, if I'm lucky enough to still be doing this, you know, in 15 years, at some point I'll be talking to him about his coaching career because he seems perfect for that. So Made for March on Paramount Plus, you can relive UConn, Michigan in the 2026 title game and get ready for that non-league matchup we're going to get in the first week of the 2026-27 season. You want to move on to the Bluegrass State? Oh, it's getting interesting down in the Bluegrass State. Kentucky coach Mark Pope, he has decided this week to take questions from fans on social media, all while former UK great Dan Issel jumped on a podcast and had an honest/hilarious take explanation for why the Wildcats maybe aren't recruiting the way they used to recruit. We'll dive into all that stuff next. First, a word from our partners. So we'll get to the Dan Issel stuff in a second. Let's start with Mark Pope. He, of course, is the third-year coach at Kentucky. It's his alma mater. And at least this offseason, it hasn't been going so well. They've targeted a lot of high-level prospects, not gotten most of them. The fan base is, they're struggling with it. And so Mark Pope decided, hey, I'm ready to talk to you. If you got questions, send them in, and I'll answer them best to my ability. And so I gather they received thousands of questions. And he jumped on social media to try to address some of them. Obviously can't do all. I guess here's my question. Is this a good idea?
Well, when he announced that he was going to do it with a video, it seemed like a lot of the response when he announced it was, this is a terrible idea. I wasn't sold on it. It was terrible. And then it seems like we're going to have at least a two-part series, if not more, and we can see some of the responses here in just a second, Josh. But after he did this, then you saw a lot more like, this is really good of Pope. Glad that he's doing it. He's leaning into it. Now, there are some big questions that he still hasn't addressed, and I would hope he does in a follow-up video, whether that happens later today or whenever. But I like that he is doing it. And the other context around this is that Mark Pope has not had a single bit of media availability since his team was knocked out of the second round of the NCAA tournament. And a lot has happened with the Kentucky situation since then. So you've got the most bloodthirsty online fan base in college basketball, maybe in all of college athletics, just waiting to hear anything from its coach. And so they finally have.
I understand why it might pop into your head, like, let's try this, because I gather Mark Pope is online. He probably sees what his own fan base and the in-state media is saying and tweeting and posting. So it's like, okay, everybody says I need to talk. Let's talk. This is a way to talk. And I watched it, you know, I guess part one of the Q&A, and I came away from it going, all right, he's a good guy. Seems like a good guy, but I always thought he was a good guy. And I'm like, it seems like a smart guy, but I always thought he was a smart guy. I just don't know that you actually help yourself in any meaningful way by doing this. Do you think Kentucky fans watched that Q&A and said, all right, cool. I guess everything's cool. Like it just seemed to me like it was a good attempt, but I don't know that it actually accomplishes what you're trying to accomplish, other than I know Kentucky has a smart and good man running its program that really desperately wants it to go well. I know that after watching that, but I knew that before I watched it.
Let's watch slash listen just a little bit here of what Pope did from his UK office here earlier this week.
Changes are being made to recruiting. You have to see a problem with 14 top 20 kids visiting and landing none. What's the change? Well, the first change, I'd like to get all 20 kids to visit our campus. That's a major win and there's no limits. Second, I'd like to land a few. Third, this year we were chasing a generational talent and we fell a little short, but we weren't sitting on our hands. We put together a roster that we are going to love watching crush it in Rupp Arena. Last question from Instagram, from at Steph Palmer. Where you been? So in the last few days, I was in Tel Aviv, Ljubljana, Milan, Cremona, as well as five or six cities in the States. But I am so happy to be back in Lexington. Let's go Cats.
So with that, you get one, I do like the transparency of here are the places I went. Mark Pope was not taking a late April vacation. He was there to recruit. He notably lost that when he said Tel Aviv. He went to go see a player that subsequently committed to LSU, which now officially has two players on his roster. But Will Wade maintains he's going to have like nine international players. So we wait and see on that. That's a whole other kettle of fish. The generational talent that he referred to there was obviously Tyron Stokes, who chose Kansas over Kentucky instead. And you're going to get a little bit of politician spin with Pope there as well. He was a little in the video. I actually like that he did this. I think some Kentucky fans did come away perhaps a bit more satiated because he did it. And again, I do think you need another video because he needs to address the general manager question. What he doesn't have one. He obviously doesn't believe he needs one at this point. It's probably the number one topic for all of Kentucky fans, because again, the Kentucky fan base isn't just online. It's intelligent. It follows the sport. It follows the team every single day of the year. And this isn't one of those things where it's a niche topic. No, people that know Kentucky, that follow that team, that love that team, they are aware of the fact that a lot of other programs out there have a general manager in place. Kentucky does not. And in spite of that, in their view, that's led to the roster situation being less than desirable. And I'm putting it kindly at this point for Pope, but I like the fact that he did it.
Again, smart guy. It's his program. Do what you want. But if I were a UK fan, I'd have a real hard time listening to somebody try to tell me they don't need a general manager in a time where most of the other great programs think that they do, particularly when your roster looks the way it looks. Like, you've got the money. You don't need money. We got the money. You need the players, and you don't have them. And most, like, John Shire has a general manager. You know, Dusty May has a general manager. Most of the guys who are operating at the tip top of the sport right now have gone down that path already. And so on some level, it just seems kind of stubborn to me. Like, you overpaid for a bad, yes, the injuries mattered, but overpaid for a roster that accomplished nothing last season of note relative to expectations. And now you're sitting here on May 7th and you don't have a roster that I personally think should be in a preseason top 25 right now. That is a problem. And you can keep saying you don't need help, but there's certainly a lot of evidence that suggests that maybe you do. Ask Kentucky fans, put it in a poll.
Yeah.
You know, and like, again, I guess I don't mind that he did it. I mean, of course I don't mind that he did it, but like, some of the questions are, So we've had 14 of the top 20 transfers visit. Got none.
I like
of them.
That he included that question. It's very easy to filter them out. Now, some of them were I want you to be at my wedding and whatever.
Yeah.
But some of them are real tough questions. I think we need one more batch of like two or three real legitimate questions. Address that stuff. You'll at least bring down the temperature a little bit. Seat's going to be hot no matter what, GP. But at least there was that. Like, this could have gone way bad. Because it was a controversial idea to begin with. And the fact that it was even this level of controversy when they announced it just speaks to the passion of the Kentucky fan base. That's a good thing. But it could have gone way bad if he hopped on, posted a video that was 3 minutes and 24 seconds, and there wasn't a single hard-hitting question included. Thankfully, there was enough awareness that we got to address some of these things head on.
I also like that he acknowledged, hey, yeah, we've missed a lot. Yeah. And acknowledged right from the jump. Like somebody asked, are we getting used?
Yeah.
Yes. He was like, yes, we're getting used. Yes, other players are using us to leverage against other programs to get better deals, and then they go to the other programs. Yes, that is something that's happening. So I appreciate the transparency, but I guess this is what I'm saying, and then we can move on to the funnier thing. If I were a Kentucky fan and I said, hey, we've had 14 of the top 20 transfers on our campus, and we got none of them, like what needs to change? And the answer is like, you know, we need to get them. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I know. I know. But like, what
is it? Wild that that's the case. I think it was 14 of the top 20. Is it transfers or high school prospects?
Whatever it was. I don't
whatever
know.
It was, should never be the case.
Right.
Kentucky should never go 0 for 14. Kentucky should never go 0 for 4.
Right.
Let alone 0 for 14. And that's at the heart of the issue of where Mark Pope stands right now with that job.
Which brings us to Dan Issel, the UK great who jumped on a podcast. Yeah, I saw it yesterday. It was at some point in recent days. The Run It Back podcast with Lou Williams, I think Michelle Beadle, Chandler Parsons. And he was asked more or less, like, what is different about Kentucky's recruiting, you know, right now? Because as noted, it ain't what it used to be. Here is a Kentucky legend talking candidly about the state of Kentucky recruiting, why it's not what it once was.
Hasn't won a national championship since 2012. It's been a lot of turnover as far as leadership since that time. Why do you feel the biggest reason that is?
Well, I a couple of reasons, Lou. I think number one, with NIL, you know, we can't cheat like we used to. I was hoping Boogie was on the show because we need more. We need him to kick in more NIL money and help us out a little bit. But I think the landscape of college basketball with the transfer portal and with NIL has really, really changed. And it has brought a lot of equality to college basketball. And when you used to count on Kentucky and North Carolina and Duke and Kansas being at the very top, I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
Sometimes you see a man or a woman, a person in their late 70s talking about the current state of things, and they're a little detached, right? They just can't quite grasp it. That day's coming for all of us, I assume. Not Dan Issel. Like, see, hey, seems like he's got it. Seems like he's got it about right. I really do think the best explanation for why have things balanced out?
Yeah.
Why do the recruiting rankings not look the way they used to look? It's that once upon a time, not to name names, but once upon a time, there was a, whatever the number is, but there was a number of programs and coaches that were out there really rocking and rolling. And most people knew who they were. And if you were one of them, you only had to beat the other ones to get the thing done. And so, like, you can...
Let's go.
So you just had... If you were recruiting a number one player in the country, you knew which other schools were going to be recruiting another number one player in the country, and everybody was going to do what they had to do, and somebody get it done. Now everybody at the power conference level has the ability to get the things done you were getting done a long time ago under the table, and it makes it harder. That's the truth. If you want to look at the recruiting rankings from 10 years ago and look at them today, and they'll look a little different. And the reason is because things have balanced out, because the things that some programs and coaches used to do to get top-ranked recruiting classes
now everybody is armed with that same weapon, and it makes it it spreads things out undeniably.
It does. It has. It will continue to do so. It's much more year by year for a lot of programs, given where they are with their coach, where they are from a momentum standpoint, with how many wins they're coming off of. It's not just going to be the same eight teams that for sure have the most money year over year, although there are some teams that have really loaded up and been consistently able to spend big, Louisville being one of those, in addition to some obvious ones. They're like, you know, we've got some stuff about, you know, Duke in the chat here, and obviously Duke is well healed as it should be. Carolina, speaking of, you know, pun unintended there, being a well healed program. Kentucky a season ago, but Kentucky not expecting to spend as much this upcoming season as it did last season. These things change, and there is a bit of a reckoning in terms of for not just coaches, I think for the general American sports fan to understand that there was a hierarchy. It existed in college football and college basketball for a long time. And maybe there's a school that scooted in. Maybe there's a school that slipped out. But you looked around, you're like, okay, those are the programs that just have the most history, the most championships, the most prestige. They have the most sway when it comes to recruiting for a variety of reasons. Sometimes that was also backed by the shoe companies doing under the table stuff for decades and decades, right? And now that's all gone. And it's still going to take, I think, another like good 3 to 4 years for a lot of people to understand that the paradigm has shifted. It just has, unavoidably. And I love what Issel said there. Kentucky fans proudly will tell you, Kentucky invented cheating. Invented cheating. Like, this is near and dear to their hearts.
Yes.
And no longer can they have that specific kind of advantage there. I love the honest, unfiltered stuff. By the way, Dan Issel, a bona fide hooper. Look him up, kids.
Oh.
Two-time consensus All-American. Career averages in college, 25.8 points, 12.9 rebounds at a time when he was like a 6'9 center playing for Kentucky. Big time prospect out of Illinois and putting up those numbers long before we had 31, 32 game regular seasons. We didn't have a 64 team tournament or anything like that. Real deal stud. It was great to see. I hadn't heard from Dan Issel in a while, but happy that he added to the discourse. Everything he said was correct.
Yes, everything. And just take AJ DeBonsa, for example, then we'll move on.
Yeah.
If AJ DeBonsa were in the class of 2015 instead of the class of 2025, he would have, somebody would have tweeted a list of schools, and he would have been considering Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and UConn. That's what he would
do. In 2015, he wouldn't have been considered. Oh, maybe UConn because it brought to Massachusetts. They were in the American. I'm not so sure about that.
I only mean because of where he's from. You might UConn would have been like, oh, let's go try to bang heads with John Calipari and Coach K and Bill Self.
Fair and valid point.
Okay. But that's it. There is no scenario where if you're Kentucky or Kansas or Duke, you have to worry about BYU recruiting this player. That does not exist. But that is the reality in this era of the sport, and that's why every word Dan Issel said, or at least among the reasons every word Dan Issel said, rings true to me. We got an update on the Players Era Festival.
Big one.
I mean, a big one. As long as you tell me I'm going to be able to... All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break.
Yeah, we are.
And then we're going to come back.
Partners.
And then you're going to tell me, I hope to God you're going to tell me...
I'll tell you.
...that... when I get ready to consume the Players Era Festival,
yeah,
next season,
yeah,
that when somebody asks me, GP, who you think is going to play in the championship game, I can look at a bracket and go, I'll take this team up here and this team from down here, and I think they'll meet right there. I'm going to trust you're going to be able to tell me something like that. If not, I'm throwing this microphone through a wall.
We'll find out if that's the case after the break.
Landman season 3 coming up sooner than you think. That's what
now
I read.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
No, not season 3. Season 2 is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Season 1 and season 2, but season 3 is coming sooner than you think.
By the way, everyone listening to the show,
yeah,
that came out of the commercials. Yeah. Oh, we know how it works. You're just hitting that fast forward. We all understand.
We all get it.
The hell are they talking about Landman again? It's because if you watch on YouTube,
hey YouTube,
the commercial was about Landman.
Hey, so that's why. That was Billy Bob Thornton. He said, "You don't know a thing about this business." That's him actually talking about the Players Era Festival.
I wondered if that was the case.
He's actually talking. He's like looking at it and he's going, "You don't know a thing about this tournament." All right. Am I going to be able to properly plan for a championship game? Do we have a real bracket with the Players Era Festival? Let's just start there.
All right, I'm going to give you everything. All right. Just sit back and soak it in. All right. So, announcement came in shortly before we went live this morning. The Players Era, which was 18 teams a year ago and used margin of victory to help determine who was going to get the most money and win, credit to Michigan, which won by 1,000 points. It was the right. The thing about that, Parrish, is like, they didn't have an outright bracket, but the right team got the most money. Like that is undeniably true. We will have brackets. It is going to be 24 teams. Initially, the hope was to have two 16-team events. That got downgraded to 24. Last year was 18, so it still is an increase in size. There will be an 8-team bracket that will play the week before Thanksgiving, and then there will be a 16-team bracket that will play the week of Thanksgiving. Yes, brackets. This will be bracket play. You will be able to look at brackets well in advance. Dare I say, before we get out of May, you will be able to see the brackets for both Players Era events, which are called, by the way, the Players Era 8 and the Players Era 16. Straight to the point. I don't love it, but I don't know what could be better. Whatever. They're going to play games. We're going to watch them. It's going to be bracket play in and around Thanksgiving.
So let me interrupt and ask you a question. Is the 18 tournament, you play three games
yes.
to a trophy. The yes. 16 team, do you play four games to a trophy?
Yes, for the final two teams, as it's been told to me. Now, these specific details were not released on Thursday, but the final two teams in the 16-team bracket will play a fourth game. And when we get the bracket stuff, we'll get a little more into the details on this later this month. But as a function of not knowing who those final two teams are going to be, those two teams, not knowing if they're going to play in the championship, the Players Era, will then have to pay off, presumably, if they are scheduling for 32 regular season games this season, whatever subsequent low major bye game they have on their schedule. You can't play 33 regular season games. And so I was told the Players Era will pay those teams off so they get paid, even though they're not going to play the game. We'll get more into the nitty gritty on that.
Even they'll pay them off even if the Strait remains closed?
Even with the Strait of Hormuz, correct. If the Strait of Hormuz is still closed by November.
Yeah.
We said a year from now. I said yes. I can't give you November. So that remains to be seen with the Strait of Hormuz. Let alone the Hunter virus.
That's tough.
Here's the 8-team field. This will be
when you plan this, you don't think you're going to have to deal with a bottleneck situation in the Strait of Hormuz. You don't think.
I know.
I just, when you're planning this is not something you factor into it, I imagine.
I agree. Okay. 8-team bracket before Thanksgiving, the week before. So sometime, you know, that Monday through Friday, whatever. What?
That's so funny. Sometimes I just think about if somebody doesn't know anything about us.
No, just roll with us. Yeah, no, they gotta don't break character. No, they gotta be able to follow this. Okay. It all leads back to the Strait of Hormuz.
Always.
Here's the 8-team bracket. Alphabetical order. Auburn, Florida, Houston, Kansas, Notre Dame, Rutgers, West Virginia, UNLV. So by far the three biggest, preseason number one, Florida, preseason top 10, Houston, and then Kansas with GPS in his top 25 and one could have the number one draft pick in next year's draft. And then
Is Auburn in or on the bubble?
Auburn's in.
We're going to put them in?
Auburn's in.
Okay, good.
Auburn's in.
About time they made a tournament.
I'm not going to do it, but I could be a total jackass and send Stephen Pearl a message and be like, "Hey, by the way, congrats on getting into the tournament." He is so well wired that he would genuinely laugh and appreciate
it. I went from like thinking it was funny to like actually feeling like, geez, man, Stephen, like, this is a tough spot for him to be in. I went from like
in the bracket. He's in the field. By the way, you're NIT champion Auburn Tigers.
You're damn right. NIT champion Auburn Tigers.
Without a doubt. So that's your Players Era 8. The Players Era 16. Alphabetical order. Alabama, Baylor, Creighton, Gonzaga, Iowa State, Kansas State, Louisville, Maryland, Miami, Michigan, Oregon, San Diego State, St. John's, TCU, Tennessee, and Texas Tech. That is a loaded, loaded field. But between both brackets, you've got 13 teams that were in last year's NCAA tournament, and I counted it up this morning, GP. You've got 11 of these teams in your top 25 and one, and at the high end, you're looking at Florida, Houston, Gonzaga, Iowa State, Louisville, Tennessee. There's a lot of stuff to be excited about there. So the particular matchups, that's coming in a few weeks. And oh, by the way, ESPN is now the broadcast rights holder. It was on TNT the past 2 years. And there'll be 37 games on the men's side total between both events. And then the women's are still going to happen as well. More details on that are coming out. They had a 4-team women's event last year. So I think it'll be 4, 6, or 8 for this upcoming season. I think they're still narrowing down the details on that. But the big picture takeaway on this is this has obviously been something that has disrupted all of non-conference scheduling. And it's down, like Maui will have Arizona and a couple other good teams this year. So Maui's still clinging, right? The battle for Atlantis is still going to be around and involved as well. And that's almost got its field finalized, but they're just not what they once were. And this is an event that when it was being planned and even in going into the year one and then going into year two, like a lot of people were skeptical that it would make it to year three or even year two. And now it's going to be on ESPN. And now, like from a programming standpoint, like Maui will still be played when it's always been played, but it is going to be the premier event. And understandably so, when you see 24 teams with national championship contenders and all that. Again, I don't know if it will be here in year 5, 6, or 7. I don't know, but it's still there. And I checked in earlier this week on the status of the NIL payments because every singles, on average, I was told for this 24-team field, on average, the teams will get paid slightly more than $1 million. Not every team gets the same amount. Kansas is being paid more to play in this tournament than any other school, whereas other schools, like understandably, just I'll pick the local school, UNLV, not making $1 million to play in this. But you know what? If you're UNLV or Josh Pastner, why wouldn't you do it?
Right. Let me ask you this. Is it tied to Tyron Stokes at all? Does the Players Era Festival get in there and say, if you got Tyron Stokes on your roster, this is what we can pay you. If you don't have Tyron Stokes on your roster, this is what you can pay you. And that could like enhance.
No, my understanding is Kansas agreed to a, I want to say 3-year deal, like a year and a half ago. And they had no idea at that point whether they
got Tyron Stokes. Gotcha.
So, but that's a good question to ask. And last year when the CSC came, the College Sports Commission, NIL Go, all that stuff, it changed the dynamic of how some of the payouts, not all the payouts. Like, for example, we don't need to get too deep into the weeds here, but like, okay, like Creighton as an example, they have revenue sharing and they don't have football. So the Players Era can pay Creighton. It goes into rev share. Creighton pays players, not an issue. But with other schools, like in Alabama or a Miami that have big, or Tennessee or Texas Tech that have big time football and they max out the rev share cap, those players still had to put their NIL stuff that they got through the system. I was told most payments have gone through. There's still a small portion that have not been cleared yet. But that was a big lingering question with a lot of this is, all right, are all these schools, are all these players, are they actually going to get paid? So I checked in on that and did my diligence. Most have, not all have, and it sounds like there's still a number that's still got to go through. But 24 teams will pay out well over $24 million. At least that's what they're purporting next season. And so that is your big Players Era update. This, keep in mind, the 16 bracket, that will happen with the UConn-Duke game on Amazon, also in Vegas, happening amid all of that. So that's a different network, but there's even more of a draw. Like Vegas, week of Thanksgiving, that's where the center of the sport is. And all eyeballs will be on college basketball because of the teams involved.
So before we get out of here, you got a piece up, CBSSports.com, where you talk to a bunch of coaches about the expansion from 68 to 76 of the men's basketball NCAA tournament. What did you hear when you talked to the coaches? I gather a lot of them aren't thrilled.
They're not. I mean, the driving force of the conversation was that while some coaches do are in favor of expansion. And we got it, by the way, folks, we got, just as a heads up, we got a busy day. The selection committee is voting on this today. So whenever you are taking this podcast, if it's early, that might not be out. Some people might not be eating this until Thursday night or Friday. Like, that news will have come and gone. We've already talked about the fact that the tournament is going to expand. So there's not going to be any emergency episode or that, barring literally someone getting on one of these committee calls and being like, hey, we're going to do this, but everyone realizes like the overwhelming majority of people don't want it. We're going to do this. Right. Okay, cool. Barring anyone stopping it, which isn't going to happen, the tournament official vote will be coming down later on today. And so there we have it. So in advance of that, heard from Mark Few. Talk to John Calipari, talk to Dan Hurley, talk to Brad Underwood, talk to Tom Izzo, talk to Ryan Odom, just because he was once the coach of a 16 seed that beat a one. And Ryan Odom is in favor of tournament expansion, but he doesn't want any of the 16s or the 15s to have to play on the opening Tuesday or Wednesday. He did not have to when he was at UMBC, and he and his staff were like praying that they wouldn't have to go to the opening round, because although if you win, you get the money.
Right.
Do you really actually experience the tournament?
Well, that's the thing. Like, this is one, and we've talked about this before, where I used to really stand on that heel of the automatic qualifiers should be in the main 64 team bracket. They shouldn't be in Dayton.
Yeah.
But the more and more I talk to coaches who were guiding 16 seeds, they were like, I want to go to Dayton because I can get a win. It's money for my school, but beyond that, it's a win on my Wikipedia page. Yep, so like, this is one of those things where if you talk to fans, they largely agree with what you just said. But if you talk to the men who coach those teams, a lot of them have told me they would rather go to Dayton than be a 16 playing on Thursday at noon against Duke, because you know what happens there.
No doubt. So, I appreciated Odom's input there. He has a quote in the story. We can link it in the pod description, Josh, and send people there. But like, here's just a sampling of what the coach has told me. Mark Few, quote, I am adamantly opposed. It's totally unnecessary. It's the dumbing down of the regular season, which is sad. We're out here trying to generate more interest in the regular season, and expansion doesn't help. He's got more, but that's an end quote. Dan Hurley, what I think makes the tournament special is the qualification for it. You don't want the regular season to be rendered meaningless and to take away from November, December, January, February. The qualification process makes the regular season intense and pressure-packed. It should be a privilege to play in the tournament, not a right. And obviously, if it expands too much and you don't have to have a real good season to make it, that would take away from the tournament. End quote. John Calipari, I'm a big believer in the idea of if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I think that applies to the NCAA tournament. Having said that, if we are to expand, my hope is that at least half the spots are held for non-Power 4 teams. If we do that, we are making the decision for the right reasons. End quote. Calipari, then his biggest issue is the fact that he doesn't even think that the tournament expansion should be on the table right now, because he hates the transfer rules. Like, he's like, this should be the, he had a whole soapbox that he went on, and I get it. So he's like, listen, I'll give you my opinion on tournament expansion. I've said this before, but I need you to put in there, like, why aren't we putting this much effort and attention consistently into the transfer rules as we are tournament expansion? I appreciate where he came from on that. Brad Underwood of Illinois, I asked if he was for or against. He said, indifference. I don't understand who is pushing this. If we want change, let's do it to blow the doors off financially. This doesn't move the needle at all. It's not good for mid-majors, low majors at all. Tom Izzo is ultimately anti-expansion, but he was like, I see it from the side of, you know, you get the conferences that are bigger, you have more teams. I get that. But he went on to say, I feel for the lower, smaller programs. I hate to break something that isn't broken. And I know we went from 64 to 68. It's like NIL. You can get to 10 million. You still won't have enough. You can have 20 million and it's not enough. If we go to 76, 96, it's never going to be enough. End quote. Izzo also invoked that, you know, the NCAA selection committees, they never actually came to the coaches to the NABC level and actually sought like real dialogue for real feedback. There are coaches that are in favor of it. Kelvin Sampson is in favor of it. Dusty May is in favor of it. There have been coaches that have spoken out and are for it, but there are other coaches in the past, like John Shire, Fred Hoiberg, Nate Oates. They've been outspoken. They don't think there's a need to expand the NCAA tournament. So as we ready for this to officially become a thing and May 7th to almost certainly be the day that the tournament expanded to 76 once and for all. I thought it interesting that quite literally national championship winning coaches, Hall of Fame coaches were willing, able, comfortable to speak out and say, you know what, we just don't need to do this. I think some of the conception of some fans, GP, is that all the coaches want it. Why wouldn't they want it? Well, that's actually not the case. There's no shortage of some of the most prominent names in the game that still don't think this should be happening, but that's not going to stop it from happening all the same.
All right. If you want to read it, you can find it. It's on the college basketball page right now, CBSSports.com. I think that's a show. We're going to call that a show?
We can call it a show. Wow. You're ready. You're done. You got time before the GP show. You're done. Okay.
I mean, if you got anything else to say, I'll talk to you.
I mean, you want to break down the Strait of Hormuz a little bit more? I figure you got thoughts.
I did watch Should I Marry a Murderer?
Of course you did.
The answer is no. The answer is no. The answer is
Spoiler
alert. No, you should not marry a murderer. What a dumb question, right?
And yet they'll make a TV show out of anything.
Three part series.
Never heard of it.
It's on Netflix right now.
Okay, it's a Netflix one.
It was top five in TV shows yesterday. I said, you know what? I'll give this a try. And you should not marry a murderer.
No, you should not.
I mean, I'm willing to listen. I understand, like, different set of circumstances. Like, you know, never say never. I got that.
Yeah.
But just, I'd advise against it. I'd advise against it, that's for sure.
All right, well, I guess that's a show. Don't marry a murderer. Open the Strait of Hormuz. Let's hope we're not heading for another epically stupid pandemic.
That was wild, wasn't it?
They went bird watching Argentina? Is that what I heard?
I don't know what's going on.
I'm actually surprised you're not more up to date on the hantavirus.
I'm trying to be out of sight, out of mind.
Okay.
I'm just trying to.
Is that your new approach now?
Yes.
The virus doesn't exist.
Yes. I think that's what like half the country did last time. And they seem to have more fun. Hey, in fairness, I think that's what half the country did last time. And they seem to have a lot more fun. All right. I mean, yeah, they died. Some of them died too. But like, whatever. I'm out of sight, out of mind with this virus.
Argentina. I got the AP story right here. Hantavirus is on the rise in Argentina, where a stricken cruise ship began its journey.
I remember.
Officials and experts in Argentina are scrambling to determine if their country is the source of the deadly hantavirus outbreak that has gripped an Atlantic cruise. Talk about your all-time nightmare vacations, man. Gosh.
Just getting on a cruise ship. I think just start there.
Have we talked about this on the show? I am generally speaking fairly anti-cruise. Have never been on one. Whoa. Have no desire to be on one. Happy to be married to someone who has just as much non-desire to ever go on one. It just doesn't appeal to me. And yet, having said that, I've got a couple of friends. I know there is an entire faction of people. All they do for vacations is the cruise life.
Bro.
That ain't me.
You ever
terrible
hear those stories?
Environment, close quarters. You don't know who you're going to be next to. You got 22-year-olds living up their best life.
No,
but not
if you
not me, never.
If you think you don't want to go on a cruise, even though you've never been on a cruise, buddy, go on one. It will enhance your already strong opinion. It is awful. I've been on one. I wanted to jump off the boat. I was ready to end it. You could have told me they had mines in the bottom of the ocean. I'd have jumped. Blow my legs off. I don't care. Yes. I was ready to have
my legs. Would you rather marry a murderer or go on a cruise?
Honestly, marry a murderer.
Okay. There we go.
Because I feel like I could marry a murderer. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to do this. But like, you can't murder me too, or else I'll tell on you.
Is that how it works?
I think I would tell on them. I would threaten them with I will tattletale.
I don't think tattletaling has ever been a strong deterrent to the murderers. I think that's an instigating factor.
On my favorites, in my context, I would push favorites and it would have Crime Stoppers there. And I would just show them all the time. I'd be like, listen, I am one button away from really messing your life up. I will tattletale. I will marry you, even though you're a murderer, and I will try to keep this between us. But get a little lippy with me.
But you would rather marry a murderer,
yes,
and get murdered than marry the murderer and go on the cruise with said murderer.
If I had to go on a cruise, I would hope that I'm married to a murderer.
So they would kill you on the cruise.
Yes. I could request a homicide, and they would be like, but I don't want to kill you, GP. And I'd say, listen, we both know you've done this before. We both know you have history with murdering. All right. I was always hoping you wouldn't murder me. But now that we're here, please end this.
Yes, and they would make a Netflix documentary out of it. That's really the way you want to go. Really.
I feel like
you might be able to pull this off if you really set your mind to it.
Yeah.
Can we be honest? There are a few things you'd appreciate more in the afterlife than the idea that they would make a Netflix documentary about you.
Not if it was like that Hulk Hogan one. I don't want it to be like that Hulk Hogan one. I don't want a three-part Netflix documentary where they're like, GP was a racist nonstop. Nobody needs that. Don't make a Hulk Hogan documentary about me.
If you're looking
for a good cruise documentary, that's Amy Bradley.
Okay.
She was on a cruise on Netflix, and she just did. They don't know what happened. All these years later, they don't have any idea what happened.
Just can't get me on. Yeah. That cruise not going to happen.
Just can't. Don't do it, man. Anyway, hey, anything else? I got to go.
That's a show.
Okay. I think we've said enough here. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry Teagle. He's a legend. Hunt Larnell Hormuz. If you're not subscribed, it's going to subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts. Apple, Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. So do that. Don't ever marry a murderer unless the alternative option is going on a cruise.
But watch So I Married an Axe Murderer. Very good movie from the early 90s. Mike Myers.
There you go. All right. Hey, we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Podcasts.